Blog Talk Radio.
This is the RF Radio Show with OJ and Dreadfish.
Good evening, everybody. It's 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and once again, you are listening to Radio RF. I'm Dreadfish here with ETOJ.
And this is Radio RF.
Yes, we are back, but not in black. I'm wearing white.
I'm not wearing anything.
Yeah. Fight the power, man. So I'm glad to be back. I had a busy week. Besides the school thing, which I've mentioned, finally done. Just did the final presentation thing today. Just got back from it to do the show. And I can feel it, you know, like that just kind of unconscious weight lifted of knowing there's not anything I have to accomplish in the immediate future, like within the next few hours. Really nice, you know, not to have that time demand on you. So the class went well. I think I did, you know, perfect on everything except for one, which was arguable, I think, but I didn't press it. But so it was nice. It's been a stressful week. Research paper, a two-page newsletter, a speech, and this presentation all I had to do this week. And then my band had a gig on Friday, and that was stressful. Our guitarist was ultimately very indisposed, and guitarist/singer, worse, very indisposed, absolutely no way he could make it to the gig. And so the other guitarist and I, we fudged it all together. Hurried doing that amongst the schoolwork I had to do and his regular work. So we performed anyway, played the songs we could play with only a guitar and drums, and I sang to two of them, kind of three. The third one wasn't much singing. And it actually turned out pretty well, given, you know, the situation. And people appreciated it, which is mainly what I was going for. So that's mainly what I was going for, is at least they appreciated that, you know, we did what we could given the situation. So that was my week.
So not only can he drum, but he can also sing.
And this was the first time I'd ever done that. So, and it was actually sounds pretty good. Listening to my voice, it sounds like somebody else's voice. And I was actually like, you know, that's not bad. Well, it's not as awkward as it used to be listening to my voice.
If you want Dreadfish to sing live on Radio RF, call in at 646-200-3733. This is so you can call in to get Dreadfish to sing live.
Oh, yeah.
You call
Speaking
in,
of that,
you can
dictate a song. Yeah, yeah, dictate a song, and maybe I'll learn it and sing it a cappella on the next episode. speaking of music, though, we do have one recording of my band's music, which we'll play tonight. I'm excited about that. It's my favorite of ours. Most fun to play on drums, too.
I look forward to that.
Me, too.
We've been waiting for some music a long time now.
Yes, it's been a little while, and I've got a few recordings, too, at least two or three of them, so we'll be able to have one for the next couple episodes.
So you gave your presentation in school today. I bet after talking to our audience, you know, all thousands of our listeners, it was quite easy to give a presentation, huh?
Yes, and also from being a teacher, which that was the main thing, you know, because I had to teach some days for 2 hours straight. And it helped also because I taught the most beginner students we had, and so they didn't always understand what I was saying anyway. But it was, you know, that was the real prepper to get me with public speaking. I've never been bad at it. I've never really liked it, but now I'm completely comfortable with it. I still get nervous, of course. It's kind of an unconscious thing. It's like, why am I feeling nervous? My voice starts to feel like it's quivery or something. I'm like, you know, I'm not consciously nervous about this, but I'm nervous. What?
I think I once heard a saying about bravery. Bravery is not about not feeling fear, but it's about overcoming fear. I mean, I think you can remove the word bravery, you can remove the word fear, and you basically the thing, same thing holds true. It's not that, you know, you're too anxious to do it or nervous or something. It's about overcoming it, you know?
True. And I think we often forget that anxiety is also, like, totally physiological. It's, you know, it's in this case, like it's a response to a perceived, I would say danger. It's an event that, you know, something rides on. It's important and it heightens your awareness of it. It's like, you know, this is here. It's right here. You can't ignore it, that kind of thing. So I think a lot of people forget that anxiety is, it's not just worrying consciously like, oh, I don't want to do this, blah, blah, blah. It's also, you know, based on preconceived notions too, I think. It's your perception of the situation, but it's a physiological automatic response a lot of times.
Yeah, I definitely can see that being true. I mean, often the way we feel about things is an indication of its role in our lives or your interaction with it.
So how has that garden been going? I remember calling you, not this week because I've been busy, but I think it was last week or maybe it was Monday, and you were going to the place where you're doing that garden. I think it was for the something homeless people, I think. What was that about now? And how's that going?
Yeah, the community garden, the food we were growing to raise for like donation to like a food bank or so we started that project. We got the ground tilled and I got everything dug out. We started plotting it out for various different areas. We have a couple of the plots, you know, filled with your transplants or seeds right now. So as of this weekend, last Saturday, I guess, you know, I have like a couple of things planted in it and some seeds going. I'm going to go down Wednesday to see how it looks. But, you know, it's at the early stage of the garden where, you know, you're planting things, waiting for things to grow, basically just constantly weeding things. Luckily, our weather is basically rain, sun, rain, sun, rain, sun, rain, sun. And any of my gardens, I don't think I've had to water anything in over a month.
Nice.
So if this weather keeps up, the only issue I'll have to deal with at the garden is planting and weeding.
Sounds good. We have our herbs. They're growing. I was worried about the basil because the basil gets eaten, but this one's outgrowing it. Like, it's growing despite the eating, and it's going pretty well. So whenever I eat, I usually just take the half-eaten leaves off because it needs to get off the plant anyway and just put those on whatever I'm cooking because I'm usually cooking it. And never heard of anybody getting, you know, sick from eating something that a bug has eaten. So, you know,
I always eat the bug first, too.
Yeah, it just wild most practical.
It's still equally nutritious. It's just a little ugly looking. And it's good for the plant to get it removed. So it's like, you know, it's a win-win. I mean, I guess the bugs are losing, so it's a win-win-lose, but...
Yeah. I used to take them off and then also pick the other leaves off. And I'm like, I'm taking off twice as many leaves. Why don't I just eat the ones that I got to take off anyway, you know? So.
I mean, sometimes they're really bad and they get a little tough or bitter. And then you know, I'll discard those ones, preferably into a compost. But most of the time they're so delicious to eat. I forgot to mention with the community garden, we did have Brick Chevity called in, and he suggested that one of the plants that go into the garden be dill. And little did he know that when I went to go start it, growing amongst the weeds was dill. So we pulled out like four or five dill plants, and then after we tilled the ground, I replanted them, and they took in their... They're obviously huge. They've been growing for several weeks now. So there is dill growing. And we found,
cool.
I forgot to mention, a bunch of kale growing out of a compost pot that we planted. So you have like an entire pot of kale already like full grown.
Kale sounds good. I think I'm moving more towards making some salad stuff. I've been a big fan lately of the microwavable bags of frozen vegetables. And I'm like, well, I guess it's about time to take the next step. And just buy some greens and other things that I can eat raw, or at least I can, you know, make with
in
minimal
preparation. Nutrition, fruits and vegetables might actually beat fresh produce from the farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when you have frozen vegetables, they're flash frozen, which means they're usually frozen within hours of picking, which is when they're optimally at their most nutritious. Whereas, you know, things you bring home from the farmer's market or the food store, can you know, we'd be days old at that point, and a lot of the nutrients have already broken down. Obviously, pick straight fresh from the garden is the simply most nutritious you'll ever have ever.
Yeah. Yeah, we are. Well, we're growing tomatoes, but we're not growing any other. I know it's a fruit. We're not growing any other vegetables, though. But the tomatoes, they're starting to look good. Looking forward to eating.
Good. So am I. I can't wait to call mine.
So I was just looking. Yeah, we have two callers.
All right. Let's bring one on at a time. Let's bring on. I think I know who this is. Is this Orbit?
It's Orbit.
Orbit.
I'm
psychic powers.
I thought it
was an
Orbit.
You guys said if anybody wanted Dredd to be in chat more often to call in, so I'm calling in.
Hey. Oh, that's nice. I think now that I don't have schoolwork, I probably will be in chat more often.
Yay. I don't believe
and
that's
actually,
what we were. It was last week, or 2 weeks ago. Wow. Skipped a week.
And then I also want Eddie to be in chat more often.
Ah. We need to have a presence in chat.
That's two chats. I get lost.
I miss you guys.
I get lost. I come in the chat, and everyone's in the new chat, but no one ever links the new chat.
I didn't realize if I was in the new chat. So I forget about it now. But we used to use it all the time.
Okay, well, I'll let you guys get to your other caller, but that's my request.
All right, thanks for calling in.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye. All right. Welcome to the show, caller. Who do we have here?
You know, I'm Mike. I'm on Ian's Bruce from University of Warmaloo, Australia. I wanted to have a guess at the story that Eddie O'Jay's been talking about.
Well, good day, Bruce. How's it going?
Yeah. Well, good. So, was it song, was it Love Game by Lady Gaga?
Oh, we have a song request.
No, it's not a request. It was a song that Eddie O'Jay's been name-dropping or whatever to get a bracelet made of weed. I don't know exactly. But I thought maybe it was Love Game by Lady Gaga.
No, it was not Lady Gaga.
Was it James Taylor?
Dreadfish has learned to sing that song. I would like to hear Dreadfish sing anything, Lady Gaga.
Let's play a love game, play a love game. Do you want love or you want fame? Are you in the game? Bob, a love game.
Can't read my poker
That's
page.
That's a totally different. No, I forgot my accent for a minute, but it's a totally different song.
I see your new career as a cocktail singer has paid off for you.
You should hear me cover the Beatles.
Yes, we should.
But not today.
You should send us a
song. I'm piss off then. Good luck with your black flame, all that nonsense.
Well, thank you. Good day, Bruce.
All right, good day, mate.
Good day. You know, people often use for an Australian, just like Bruce. Sure. On Facebook, I go by Nick Dundee. I'm vagrantly trying to get Facebook to tell me to change my name because, you know, the whole big thing about them making people use your, you know, real name and outing people and all that gibber jazz. So once they started, like, popping people on new for that, I changed my name to Nick Dundee. And I told this story probably already once or twice, but someone actually given the wife and I a check to Mick Dundee.
That's funny. Yeah, that's Facebook. Facebook. All I can do is just kind of shake my head. Well, this is nice on our first episode. Back in a week, we have two old callers in, so we're off to a nice start.
I know, it's so nice. I guess everyone missed us for a week. We just get more weeks, see if we get more phone calls. High correlation, I've noticed.
You got to, you have to be unavailable sometimes for people to appreciate you.
That's right. You don't always know what you got till it's gone.
Mm-hmm. That's why I don't always answer your calls.
It makes the heart grow fonder. And I just made a song. Incidentally, I wasn't going for it, but it kind of just happened.
Let's see. Well, I guess it's just about time to take our main guest on the show.
Okay. Let's do it. I want to bring him on.
All right. Bring him on. Wickets.
Eddie O.J. asked me a couple of weeks ago, what is a Setian? And my answer to him was, the Setian is one who strives and works towards becoming attuned to his or her own higher self and will, but not just to become attuned to it, but also to work towards its complete and absolute manifestation. The primordial source for this refined consciousness being, at least in my mind, that which is known as the Prince of Darkness, whom we Setians identify as Set. The Setian also is sort of a spiritual alchemist who, through initiatory and greater black magic, works towards the transforming his mortal coil into the essence of divinity.
I think it's standard relate to some of those concepts. But I think the first question I want to ask you is, who is Set and why Set?
Who is Set and why Set? Okay, are you asking me who is Set and why did I choose Set?
Well, I guess yes.
Okay.
But more in the context of, like, who is Set and how did we get to the point where there was, you know, why is Set being used as an imagery, I suppose?
Okay.
As a way to
Well, I can only focus on my own personal experience, maybe. And
okay.
what I have to say is, Set was the ancient Egyptian Metur, or god of winds, storms, chaos, war, disruption of the cosmic stasis, and the god of darkness and of the sky by night. Set was originally honored and worshipped as a great and powerful Netjer, whose kingdom was the majesty of the night sky, which he ruled from his seat behind the constellation of the seven stars, or what we know in modern times as Ursa Major. Set is one of the most ancient and noble semblances of that, which is also called Satan or the devil, Prometheus, Beelzebub, Mephistopheles, etc. Its names and phases are many. Set's name ultimately means the isolator or separator, to set apart, which also makes him a perfect lord of the left-hand path. As Set separated himself from the laws of the cosmic order of things, so we who walk this path have consciously, of our own mind, of our own will, reject and have separated and liberated ourselves from the socially established norms, the conventional, the traditional ebb and flow of society, popular culture, and conventional religion and morality.
So, for what? Oh, sorry.
How did you personally find Set?
How did I find Set? Well, okay. That is a... Okay. This happened in the summer of 1989 or 1990. I had been a Satanist for about 5 years. Look, I became a Satanist when I was about 15 years old in the year of 1985. I was born July 7th of 1970, that is to say. So, my birth date is pretty easy to figure out. And I would occasionally hear about the Temple of Set by word of mouth or something I read in some book. It wasn't until I got a book called The Occult Experience that I really started taking a hard look at Set and the Temple of Set. The Occult Experience has a great chapter on the Temple of Set. I've started to study up on the Egyptian god Set. And ancient Egyptian mythology altogether, and was very drawn to it. I love the combining of dark imagery with ancient Egyptian symbolism. Soon I began to really ask the question, though, does the dark lord of the abyss, does the lord of darkness truly exist? For that matter, does Set exist, as exclaimed by the Temple of Set? And so one night, while playing with my dogs in the backyard, I realized that my wanting to know had become a need to know. And then I outstretched my arms, looked up at the night sky, and began reciting an invocation of Set that I had written about a month earlier. Immediately, an intense inspiration, warmth, peace, energy washed over me like a waterfall, or as if a bolt of lightning had struck me, infused within my very being an awesome sense of bliss and heightened awareness. I had performed ritual invocations before, but had never even come close to this type of a presence. New insights and perceptions began racing through my mind, and I remember feeling a sensation, like I was floating. I felt as if I was light as a feather. I can't remember how long the working lasted. Maybe about 45 minutes. It felt as if my mind had become merged with that of another. Something ancient and far more intelligent. I remember the words entering into my mind. My eyes are the eyes of starlight. After this working happened, which I am not giving it its true justice, as words simply cannot describe such a life-changing occurrence. Basically, on that night, I was changed. My life was changed forever. On that night, I am convinced, personally, that Set did come forth and ordained me Asatian. By the way, the works, the words, that is to say, my eyes or the eyes of starlight, I would later find in the word of Set, which says, I summon you that I may see with the eyes of Set, your creator, the eyes of starlight. I don't know if that, I don't know if that has anything to do with anything, but it's an interesting coincidence.
So you mentioned that you like the Egyptian symbolism. Is that totally your thing, or is the Egyptian, like, how really Egyptian is the Setian philosophy, or does it mostly borrow?
No. The Setian philosophy is not purely Kemetic. It's not purely Egyptian-based. No. That's a falsehood. Anybody who tries to say that they're lying. No.
What are some of the differences?
There was a lot of difference. For instance, I mean, look, their Setian philosophy is, from what I've experienced and from what I've studied of it, is from a Western left-hand path philosophy. It's not necessarily Eastern, but it could be Eastern. I'm sure it could be as much Eastern as it could be Western, but from what I've experienced, it is more of a, have you heard of, what I'm trying to get at is Kefir, which is the most I'm trying to describe Kefir is the most philosophical understanding of Setian philosophy that I can conceive of right now.
Eddie, the word.
Did you have something to say? Eddie, did you say something?
Oh, I was just going to suggest a question. What's your thoughts on that? I was going to ask about the Temple of Set.
The Temple of Set? The Temple of Set is very interesting. Okay. Well, the Temple of Set is a left-hand path religious institution formulated as an initiatory school of black magic and left-hand path studies and practices. It is not a social club or an internet forum. It is for serious and dedicated students and practitioners of the black arts. One enters the Temple of Set as a first-degree Setian and receives the first of the jewel tablets of Set, that is the crystal tablet. He then begins a rigorous study and practice of the teachings of Setian magic and philosophy contained within the crystal tablet and the temple's suggested exhausting reading list in accordance with his own individual will. The first degree Setian also begins to work closely with an initiate of the Setian priesthood in a student/mentor sort of relationship. A priestess or priest of Set, which he clicks with, which he identifies with, he becomes friends with. The first this first working magical relationship is designed to demonstrate that the beginning Setian initiate is an adept second degree black magician, which is recognized by the mentoring priest or priestess of Set. There is a 2-year time limit to this process, during which time the first degree Setian is required to demonstrate whether or not he or she is indeed an adept Setian black magician. The Temple of Set is also a religion. After all, it does have a priesthood, and initiates of the priesthood of Set take their degrees and titles very seriously and literally. But I've been through the initiatory process of first degree to second degree. It can be rigorous, yeah, sure. It can be difficult, but for me, personally, I enjoyed it. For me, it was fun.
Now, we would like to ask you a little bit more about that. First, we're going to take a short break for a song.
Okay.
Before we come back, here's a song from my current band, so I'm happy to finally have a recording on here. The band is called The Stress Exchange, and we are also on Bandcamp, by the way. You can hear a couple of the songs, and I'll play them in later episodes, too. So, by The Stress Exchange, this song is called Not My Fault.
Thank you.
All right, so that was Not My Fault by The Stress Exchange, for which I'm the drummer. So, coming back into our conversation, if you're just joining us, we are interviewing Adremelech about the Setian philosophy. And so, Itti, you had a question to start off the next round.
Real quick before that, I just wanted it to be known that I have pretty long hair, and I was doing, like, the whole hair bob thing, you know, during the music break. We were rocking pretty hard.
I remember having hair to do that with.
So you're wondering, is the whole hair thing, is it satanic or Satian? It's both, dude. It's all of it, man. Come on, you know that.
All right. We named tonight's episode Summer of the Black Slam, and we've been doing that for this entire series. Without asking a very important question. What is the Black Flame, and what does the Black Flame mean to you?
Okay, well, the term Black Flame I first saw in these modern times, in Michael Aquino's document, The Diabolicon, where Lucifer came down from heaven and infused within all mankind the essence of his mind. In doing this, the radiance of Lucifer's mind radiated out across the earth in the form of brilliant rays of black light. But what is the black flame? The black flame to me is the essence of Set within us. It is the energizing force of the will to magic, self-consciousness, and the higher intellect. It is the very essence of being within all self-aware entities, all understanding of science and mathematics, independent thought, abstract and creative thought, such as invention, philosophy, metaphysics, religion, all music and works of art, all expressions of the creative mind and will are spawns or manifestations of what we call the black flame. It is that which gives us a higher sense of self and mind, just like other animals have a more heightened sense of sight, smell, and sound.
Now, I have a follow-up question. Something as unique as the black flame sounds like it might be equally important in something as unique as a Kefir. What is the relation between the two? And I've had to fight back saying Zephyr every time. I like it. It sounds more fun that way. Zippity-doo-zah, we're going to Zephyr today. No?
I'm not exactly sure what are you asking me to. What is the difference between
any like interrelation? You know, like it seems like the black
relationship between Kefir and the black flame.
Yeah.
Oh, well, let's see. Well, what is the black flame? The black flame is the very spawn. Actually, in my personal opinion, black magic is the very spawn of the black flame. It's the very spawn of Kefir. Whenever we create, whenever we manifest our will upon objective reality, we are manifesting the black flame into objective reality.
Okay, that's the one kind of
that to me is the relationship right there.
So it has to do with
simple
will.
What?
Would you say it has to do with exercising will, like generally speaking, then?
Yes. Yes, exactly. The exercise of the will. The will to magic is the manifestation of the black flame upon the universe, upon our reality, our reality.
Okay, so you mentioned black magic before, and I've often seen black magic depicted into both lesser black magic and greater black magic. I'm pretty sure you used that stuff. Could you talk a little bit about the lesser and greater black magic?
Sure. There is a concept, some Zetians actually divide the power of magic into three categories: lesser, medial, and greater black magic. I don't see the sense in that as an individual. In my own understanding of magic, I don't see the sense. But I understand it. I understand it. Let's put it this way. Lesser magic is... Hold on a second. Let me think of it.
We can go back to the question if you need a few minutes.
Lesser magic. Well, no. It's pretty easy to describe. Lesser magic is the altering or changing the subjective universe in order to produce a proportionate... Well, actually, black magic is the art of altering or changing the subjective universe in order to produce a proportionate change in the objective universe in accordance with the will. However, there are some magicians, and I agree with them in a certain way, that there are divisions between there is a lesser form of magic and there is a greater form of magic. Lesser black magic to me would be the influencing of events or people in the real world by the magician in order to produce a desired outcome or result in a given situation or circumstance, which the magician deeds, or not deeds really, but feels to be important enough to his own self and the ebb and flow of his own life and or others, therefore deems appropriate the utilization of the will to magic. Some might identify lesser black magic as the casting of spells, blessings, and curses. However, there is a threefold process in the practice of greater black magic, which I describe as: 1. Organization. All magic originates and begins in the mind. Abstract and subjective thought begins in the mind. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
2. Manifestation. The refinement of the will through ritual magic employed by the magician to make his will understood by the universe. And number three, crystallization. The realization of the magician's will in a definite form within the fabric of the objective universe. Subjective thought and ideas become objective reality. What in ancient Egyptian magic was known as uniting the two lands, the objective and subjective universes. That, to me, is greater black magic.
Uniting the subjective and objective universes.
Right, yes. It's completely different. The objective universe is reality, what we all see every day, what we live every day. The subjective universe comes from our own mind, our own will, our own reality.
Would this be relatable to, I guess it's pronounced gnosis?
Can it be, what was that again?
I don't know how to pronounce it. Gnosis, you know, gnosis.
Gnosis.
I don't know how to pronounce it. Yeah.
Yeah, gnosis. I think so. I personally think so. Gnosis can be a manifestation of subjective reality, yeah, within the objective universe.
So this greater black magic, then, would you be able to describe, or would you be able to say that that's kind of the goal of the Setian philosophy, or what is the goal?
It is. I personally think it is. The primary goal, in my opinion, is the, well, it is. It's the refined consciousness being made manifest within the objective. The setting is also sort of, what did I say? The setting is also sort of a spiritual alchemist who, through initiatory and greater black magic, works towards transforming his mortal coil into the essence of divinity, which is exactly what Kefir is about. Exactly what Kefir and initiation itself in the black arts is about.
Dreadfish. So it's apotheosis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To me, anyway, that's what it's about. However, it's a life journey. It's not easy to do. It's a life, and it's not the easy way out. It's not the easy way to go about life. Trust me. I have been through Setian initiation about 7 years, and trust me, it can be hellacious. But it can be glorious, too. The gloriousness of it is a reward. And, you know, it's just different for everybody. It's different for everybody. I cannot explain it in my own way and have somebody else say, oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Oh, sure, yeah, blah, blah, blah. No, that's not what I want to do. Dreadfish, that's not what I want to do. I'm not here to convert. I'm not here to exclaim my beliefs to anybody. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
ATOJ knows that, I'm sure. Right?
Yes, you are, my friend.
Yeah.
Now, we really appreciate having you on tonight.
It's been an awesome episode, I think. And look, even though resettings don't look for converts, we like to express our opinions. We like to express our message so that it's out there so those who are seeking will be able to find what they're looking for. Like I found what I'm looking for back in the early or back in the late 90s. Like what I looked for and found out, is it the same thing? It's exactly the same thing. It's not about converting. It's about looking. It's simply about looking for others who might be looking for you.
It's a good way of putting it.
Seth does not think of those who do not
Stop.
Think of him. Those who seek after Seth, he does think of. And he wants to be known to them. He wants them to discover. He's not going to come forward and do it on his own. You've got to work yourself. You've got to work yourself. That's all I can say. I know I'm getting way too deep into it, but...
Well, that does present a good closing thought.
Right now. I'm sorry, guys.
That comes around pretty well for a good closing thought. So thank you very much for being on. This has been a good episode. This whole series has been good. Every episode has been pretty good so far. So thank you.
I mean,
we still need to think an episode since Monday's the last Monday of this month. We're gonna try to do it on Monday. I haven't heard from Aureus. I really haven't heard back from him. I don't know if you could call him for us or something. I know you have some contact with him. I know you haven't heard from him a while either.
He might just be shy. I don't know. I don't know, man. Aureus is a cool dude, though. I'm not sure.
All right, well, we'll figure something out. Now,
yeah.
I did want to share my own opinion on one of tonight's topics, and just really briefly, the term Kefir that he keeps bringing up. I simply prefer to call it Zephyr, as I sung before, and I promise I won't try to sing too often, but I believe Dreadfish has promised to sing a Lady Gaga song, so don't worry, that'll be happening, Lady Gaga Fish. That'll be a lot of fun. Anyways, I was going to say that I also borrow that term sometimes when I do the philosophical musings or magical workings. It's a great way to kind of separate various mental projects you're working on and kind of can compartmentalize as you, you know, do magic or, you know, continue to live your life working towards your various goals. Now, we do have a few episodes loosely being planned for July. One of them is a debate about gun ownership. So we have two people on for gun for regulations. I guess we need, you know, some people who are going to be a little bit more pro-gun. So if you want to be, you know, involved in this discussion, you can just contact us on RF. Let's see. We're hoping to interview maybe one of the administrators. I think that could be a lot of fun. Maybe have some strong feelings on who that should be. You can comment somewhere so they know and agree to do it. We've also got an episode in the works for feminism, and I think we still have a debate on works on consciousness if we ever actually... The issue with some of these topics is, like, I personally don't like to do a topic if I'm not going to make it informative. And I tend not to like to say things unless I'm, you know, fact-checked or things where I actually know what I'm saying, and I don't like to tend to just share my opinion. I like to base my opinion off of facts, so if I share something, I want to usually be able to collaborate what I'm saying. So episodes like the consciousness debate require a lot of, like, research, simply.
Yeah,
I don't have a lot of free time.
That's a very in-depth, interesting, and kind of fundamental topic, so we definitely want to do it justice, not just be like, oh, dude, I think it's kind of like this, you know.
Plus, it's a hot button topic. People get pretty, you know, pretty antsy when they start discussing these types of fundamental issues. So it's good for everyone to be research prepared. Preferably, we'll have like an outline sketch with questions and responses and ideas, so we kind of all know what everyone's going to say to begin with. And we do those from occasion. You know, a lot of times the show takes a free form kind of feel because it's just, you know, how Fisher and I are. You know, we're just free form.
Free form jazz.
Yes. Which is not the type of music that was played before. However, if we were to take Dread Soul, it would be pure jazz music.
I am made of jazz.
I'm made of chocolate lava.
Ah, chocolate lava. I do like chocolate. Lava. Chocolate and jazz are both pretty good. Classy. Classiest of their respective fields.
You know, I'm not really a sweets person, but if I am in the mood for chocolate, I like dark chocolate, and I like dark chocolate with the sea salt in it. I think that's the yummiest.
I've never understood the salt of the sweet things, but I like dark chocolate. I've had the 99% cacao chocolate, and it's just wonderful. Oh, so good.
Yeah.
The best bitter in the world.
I'm telling you, you put some salt on that, and it's a whole new bubble. Have you ever had a chocolate-covered pretzel? You know, it's not the pretzel that makes that thing taste amazing. It's actually the salt. Salt's
the
most crucial thing. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. I might try some dark chocolate with salt. I may have tasted it, but I don't know. I do love chocolate, though. Not much in the way of candy, but chocolate and ice cream. Mint chocolate chip ice cream.
Oh, man, I can't eat ice cream.
Oh, that's true. I'm sorry. I shouldn't be. I'm trying to cut out actually.
I mean,
like we've talked about, because I can tell a difference in the way I feel after I eat wheat.
Yeah. Maybe you got bit by that tick.
Yeah, actually, I read, now we don't have time, but I'll just quickly state, you know, basically, because of the way we've bred wheat, that's the problem. It's not wheat itself much so much, but the way we've bred it, it now has different proteins, I think. You know, they're newer. And our bodies just are not equipped to handle those very well. And so that accounts generally for the problems of wheat. As it stands, wheat's just not good for you.
I'd also point out that it's also one of the more recent introductions into human diets. And to be honest, wheat products are completely unnecessary in the diet. They're basically just empty calories.
Yes.
And there's really no needed nutrients found in them. And I mean, there's simply no nutrient reason to continue eating them. I mean, that's not an argument against eating them, because whatever, they taste good, you enjoy it, it doesn't make you sick, and eat it, whatever. I'm just saying, like, it's just not a particular food group we actually need.
Yeah. Yeah, I was, when I recently saw a food pyramid, I was just completely like, nah, because grains, you know, the number one thing on there, and I'm like, nah, I feel like, you know, vegetables should probably be the number one thing on the list, but, you know. I think with as much as we've talked about food lately, we ought to somehow work this nutrition stuff into some kind of episode.
Yes.
But
that's going to be one of those episodes that I don't like doing, because I'm going to go against conventional medical wisdom or science. And I tend not to like doing that.
Yeah.
Well,
we may figure something out.
Yeah.
Well, that's about all the time we have today. So it's been a good episode, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
Yes, and if you know a Satanist, have them contact us, or if you are an RNA Satanist, contact us, and or I'll be contacting you. Oh, Thursday's episode is either something permaculture-ish or something to do with, like, hiking or something. I don't know. It'll be nature-oriented. You know us hippies over here. Gotta hug a tree, man. Anyways, hug an X tree. Hug a tree. Good night, good morning, good afternoon.
And good now.
Love, peace, and happiness.